I think before we start, we're all Chelsea fans here. We all have our own opinions. We all have our own feelings towards what's been going on, and we'll just have to respect and agree to disagree with whatever we say. I think that should be stressed.
Except for you and me, Collins.
Yeah, no, you can fuck right off, Matt.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's only fitting to start this episode off just with a big, deep sigh, because, oh man.
Oh, you are teeing this up so good.
Enzo, to me, looks like a more agile, basically a young Chess Fabregas.
A Rolls Royce, man. Gotta sell it.
Messi is the Jorginho of international football. That was a dumb take.
Welcome to another episode of Flag Stays Down podcast, Double Dubs Division, Super Bowl. There you go. Go Chiefs. No, but tonight, full house, we're Mardi Gras Eve. Got myself, Andy, we got Parker, we got Matt. Matt, we'll start with you tonight. How you doing?
Doing good. Just busy with work. Had a eventful weekend. Went and spent a bunch of money at Home Depot and Menards, buying baseboards and a sliding barn door for the basement, and then installed a reverse osmosis water filter that my wife wanted to have. Couldn't tell you what it does, but apparently it's supposed to be better water. So I spent about 3 hours getting that all installed. So, very productive weekend for me. But yeah, it's been good. Can't complain too much. It's weird us potting on a Monday. Usually, Sunday is a nice little wrap up, but we'll look at this as the start of a good week. So, looking forward to good things. Parks, how are you?
I'm just dandy. Happy I was able to watch both games and this week, and then it's Super Bowl Sunday, which is pseudo American holiday for us here, and it's always fun to catch the game, catch the spectacle. A lot of people place wagers on things that are crazy that you can place wagers on, like what color is the Gatorade going to be that gets dumped on the coach and things like that. So it's it's always a fun thing. I had maybe five or six too many beers last night. And so it should be a national holiday on the Monday after, for to not have to work. I'm going to go ahead and throw my hat into that ring and say that if a president ran on that campaign, I think he'd win. Because I think a lot of people would agree with that being a national holiday. So, but it was fun. I braced for what was supposed to be like a big winter storm for us. We were supposed to get 12 inches of snow on Saturday, and we did not. We got like three. So I did all my grocery shopping. I was telling Collins before I made like six dishes for the Super Bowl, just for the two of us, just because it's fun and I like cooking and it's something to do and it's something that takes up the time. And then Carolyn will have food to eat off of for the rest of the week. So man, it's good week, good Chelsea performances. It's fun what wins can do for the demeanor of our fan base. It reminds you that winning is the most and the only important thing in this sport, right? Getting wins, beating teams, and showing up and having good performances changes everything real quick. Just a week ago, everybody was potch out, and not saying that everyone's potch in yet, but it takes the heat off the seat when you get some wins. So it's always a good thing to see.
Yeah, and I'm not potch in yet. But I'll hold off on my bashing him for a week. We'll put it that way. Matt, I have no idea what a reverse osmosis filter is, but it just makes me think of Osmosis Jones, which was one of my favorite movies as a kid. Classic. I had to look it up as you were talking about your filter. Can't believe that movie had a $70 million budget and only made $15 million.
Worth it. For an animated movie, that's bold.
60 mil probably went to Bill Murray. All right. Well, it was a good weekend. My Chiefs won. Super Bowl champs. Did not hit on the bet of Travis Kelce proposing to Taylor Swift at the end of the game. That was at plus 2,200. But I did hit on the Taylor Swift appearances during the game, which was 4.5, which was shocking. I think it counted 13. And I'm a big commercials guy. I love commercials. And so the Super Bowl is like my Christmas. Fantastic. We had a win today. I'm not gonna ruin the pod like I said I was going to with commercial rankings, but you know, I'll save that for another day. But boys, we did have two wins. We're through in the Carabao Cup, FA Cup. Sorry, got the two legs mixed up there. We're through in the FA Cup, through to play Leeds coming up here. And we get a win, our 13th consecutive win in the Premier League against Crystal Palace to push us back into the top half of the table. Woo, heating up. But that is a big change, Parker, as you alluded to, coming off pretty shitty losses to Liverpool and Wolves. If you want to hear how shitty it was, make sure to go back and listen to last week's episode. But Parker, you were talking pre-pod about you noticed some changes from last week to this week. What are you seeing?
So, especially in the Villa match, and you know, I thought we played not terrible against Palace today, but definitely not our best, and it wasn't great performance, especially the first half. But the Villa match, we looked like a team reborn. It was kind of shocking to see. And I know Villa probably wasn't at their best or have their best lineup out there either, but man, we took it to them, which was great. But some of the things that wanted to highlight that I just noticed, especially like, so Jackson on that left wing, he came down and pressed on people more than I've ever seen him. It was him and Noni on the right, and they bit down and defended better. And that helped out like Enzo and Caicedo a ton because they were able to not be overloaded on those flanks. And we won the ball a ton in those situations. So props to them on that. The whole Cole Palmer false nine, I don't know how anyone feels about that quite yet. Sometimes it works pretty well. Sometimes just isn't feel right. I still think we were missing an out and out nine, but the other thing wanted to shout out quick was just the fan support. The away supporting fans in both matches were fantastic. And there's no better feeling for me as a fan sitting in America, wishing I could go to these games, but then hearing our fans consistently cheering. It's not something we hear every single week. And that was a difference maker, I think, in those matches. We were loud against Villa. We had the don't worry about a thing against Palace. You know, Palace, there was a referee mishap at the end of the first half or whatever and delayed the second half starting. They played some Bob Marley. We took it as ammo and we kind of, you know, sang it, made it our own. And they sang it for most of the second half. And you could hear it for most of the second half. And I think that's just a change in mentality. I think, you know, especially the away supporters, the guys who are willing to go out midweek and travel and see the team play. They're the heart and soul of the club. You know, they're not the touristy fans. They're going to their designated section that they get the allocated tickets for, and they go and they support, they sing, and they're true to it. So I think, you know, it's that unique combination right now of like our team isn't where it needs to be. And a lot of times, you know, teams rely on, you know, quote, the 12th man, right? The fans to help them get back into games or help them stay involved in games. We haven't had that factor for our team in quite some time. It's good to see. And, I'm proud of the supporters for helping bring some life into the team. And that feeds off of each other. You know, the fans bring in life. Team gives a little bit more effort, brings the fans back into the game. You know, it's kind of that constant feedback loop. And it was really cool to see. And then it fires guys up. And then they go out and have worldlies like Enzo did, right? Bad press about Enzo this week, about him not being happy, not wanting to, you know, stay with Chelsea, and then comes out and gets 2 goals in 2 games and one that, hang that thing up in the Louvre, right? It was something special. So good to see the team respond. I think the response came one game too late. We would have loved to see that kind of a response against Wolves, right? But nonetheless, it came, and something to cheer about.
Yeah. If came a little early, that'd be nice. We'd be on, 37 points? Put us in seventh. It'd be real nice. Mm-hmm. No, but I agree. There have been some changes. And yeah, I know Poch had talked about this is a meritocracy, and we hadn't really seen that during that rough stretch. You know, it was kind of just, to me, it didn't seem like there was any rhyme or reason to why people were out there. It seemed like senior players over players who were in form. You know, we've talked extensively about Mudryk. He was in form and then fell off the table. But he, you look at that Villa match, and it was guys who were out there fighting, maybe not for the manager, maybe not for the club, but they were fighting for each other. Certainly fighting for their own place in the lineup. And so what I wanted to see was that same lineup minus Benoit, out injured in this one. And we got mostly that, which was nice. And it's exactly like baseball, like football, like basketball. Play the hot hand, feed the hot hand. Keep putting these same guys out there until they fail. This is a group that seems to click. I know the first half today against Palace wasn't a whole lot of clicking, but the tempo just seems to be a little bit quicker with the guys that are out there these last two matches. And that's something that's been killing us all season, is that we play too slow, too many touches, too much waiting. You just got to go. You got to attack. And so that's the biggest change I've seen in these last two matches.
I mean, we won.
That's a big change.
Obvious change, right? Like, I haven't had a chance to watch both matches, so I unfortunately don't have a lot to kind of add to it. But everything that I've kind of seen and heard from both of you, it definitely seems like it's heading the right way. Obviously a long way to go, but I think we're starting to see more pieces kind of fall into place. And at times maybe even kind of find what the identity of this team is. Parker, I know that's kind of your thing, is like, what are we, right? We still don't know. I think we're starting to see more pieces of that kind of come to light. But we take the wins where we get them, especially with this team, right? Every match you were very Jekyll and Hyde type team. But hopefully it's the start of kind of brighter days for a lot of these players and for the club itself.
Now, I will say, we all played together volleyball in college, and you guys know me, I was very passionate, we'll say, out on the court. And that led to my play being a bit of a roller coaster. And I think, Matt, you talking about what this team is, I think we have a very passionate group of guys, which is, talking about changes, a big change from last year's dull, boring, zoned out team. You got young guys in here, and they are, when they're high, they're high. But when they're low, it is low. It's very low. But I just look at some of the celebrations today. You got De Sassi crowd surfing after Gallagher's goal. you got Nico Jackson, who had been subbed off, coming off the bench, running across the pitch to go celebrate with his teammates after Enzo's goal. You know, you look at the Villa match and Nico's snatching Enzo's shirt, kissing it, and then praising it. It's a fiery group, I'll say. And if as long as they can ride that wave more than just a couple matches here and there, I mean, it should be positive. And so I think they need to grow into that a little bit more, grow into being the asshole. You know, this weekend, our collegiate coach was inducted into the Conference Hall of Fame. And it talked a lot about the fuck you Oshkosh chants. That's something we need at Chelsea. Not necessarily fuck you Chelsea. There's enough of that going on. But just the mutual dislike across the league for us, for our players, whereas we enjoy them. We want those players on our team, but we don't want to see them against us. I think that's something we need to feed into.
Unfortunately, usually the teams that are the most hated are the ones that win, right? I mean, Patty Mahomes, and talking about the NFL, he was asked about that countless times, about the dynasty aspect of their team and how people were cheering for him at first and now they want to see him lose. Right. You get sick of seeing the same team win every single year. So that's where we got to get to. Right. We want to get to the team that's hated because we win, and we win with style, and we win with some swag. But I'm totally with you, man. Thinking about like last year, I almost like can't believe I did it as a fan, because the Mason Mounts and the Kai Havertzes of just like when they scored, it was just like almost this like dreaded relief feeling, like, oh, like, thank God, like, I survive another day kind of a, and these guys don't, like, they have the same amount of pressure, if not more, and they're just fired up. They just want to score. They just want to go out and play and score and win. So I like that energy way more. And I think the inconsistency isn't due to the emotional state. I think the inconsistency is due to the average age being 21 and a half. Like, that's our biggest downfall right now, is our average age is not there, and it's not experienced, and we don't have that core group of experienced guys. Collins, you said this weeks ago, but it's like we built this team to peak in 4 years. Like, we built this team to peak in 3-4 years. It's like this is the baby steps of that, and we aren't close to peaking yet. We're not close to getting there yet, because we got a bunch of 21, 22-year-olds out there. The fact that Malo Gusto is 20 blows my effing mind. I keep hearing that stat and I keep saying, you're wrong. There's no way. Who is this kid? Like, what is going on? He looks 24 all day and he plays with the experience of a 25, 26-year-old. Like, it's unbelievable.
We got a bunch of those guys too. I mean, Cole Palmer is 21. Noni is 20. Enzo is 22, 23. You got a lot of young guys and a lot of growing that needs to be done. Well, Parker, you did allude to Nicholas Jackson on the left wing and how that's affected play. He did come up originally as a left winger with Villarreal, converted then to a striker. Where do you go with him for the rest of the year? Do you keep riding the left wing wave, or we don't have another striker at this point, right?
Go ahead, Matt.
Keep him on the left. Collins, you'll love this. We played with Broya for how long? Who gives a shit if we have a striker at this point? The left side is problematic, right? Mudrick, again, you're not entirely sure what you're going to get game to game. And even so, you're probably not getting it for a full 90. You're probably getting spurts throughout a full 90. Raz on the left, sometimes it works, but usually doesn't. Depends on what kind of mood he's in. You really don't have anybody else. I think Jackson would be more effective on the left. I know that brings in the problem of who do you put in that false nine, or what do you run with that? Again, I don't think it really matters. I think that would be a good spot for Nkunku to play. But again, Jackson is not an out and out number nine. He's the closest thing that we have. Like Collins, you said, he was brought up as a left winger, kind of converted striker. He's just not, in my opinion, he's not an out and out number nine. I think he is kind of more of a hybrid, not Kai Havertz hybrid, not even close, because Kai is just trash. But
Timo Werner,
he does have that attacking mentality. He does have, well, now that you mention it, he does have a very good work rate. And you know, can he score from the left wing position? We'll see. He just might be a darker shade of Timo Werner. But either way, like, that's kind of what we need, is we need somebody who's at least, like, you know what you're going to get out of them, right? We have goal scorers all over the pitch. We're starting to see that, I think, more and more, at least in the last probably month and a half, 2 months. We have goal scorers all over the place. So I'm not concerned about his goal output. Do I think he's going to be great in the assist column? To be determined. But I do know that he's going to bust his ass down that left side, and that's going to take a lot of pressure off of Chills too. So I think that is going to kind of free up Chilwell to not have to bomb up and down for a full 90. So I think it's going to help. I don't see it hurting us at all going forward.
What do you think, Collins?
I like him on the left. I think he can do fine with hold up play, playing centrally. He does fine with his back to goal, but I don't think that's his strong point. I look at him more like a Raheem Sterling, almost, where he's better facing goal. He's better attacking a defender than holding off a defender. That being said, his link up play as a nine is great. We've seen that he can finish in that role. He makes runs in that role. Like, I'm not saying he's bad at either one or good at either one. But we do seem to play better with him on that left-hand side. But Matt, as you alluded to, what do you do with that nine role? I think Christopher Nkunku is a great fit, as you mentioned there. And then you push Cole Palmer out to the right. But I'm kind of, not to shift gears here, but I'm kind of done with Cole Palmer at that false nine, at least with the way that we're playing. If we're going to keep chipping balls into the box and, you know, play high crosses, then you need a target man. Then you need a Nico, somebody who can get up and go get it. Cole Palmer isn't going to be that guy. Cole Palmer's better with his feet. Keep riding Nico on the left, but you got to change the way you play to be a little bit more direct, instead of more wing play that way.
Yeah, I like Cole in that false nine, because I like the fact that he wants to come back and get the ball at his feet a lot of the time, and he doesn't just stick to pure hold-up play, mainly because I don't think Chelsea knows how to play with a pure nine, period. And when Broya was there and when Jackson was there, there was stretches of like 40 minutes where we didn't see them, where we just can't utilize them. We had that with Nkunku against Wolves as well, where we fizzed a ball into him like in the first 5 minutes, and then I don't think Nkunku had a touch in the next 40 minutes of that half. It's painful to see, because they just get lost in the game. And so I don't think we know how to play with that system yet. And so Cole's good at coming back and getting the ball and finding ways to pop up and still be effective. So that's fine to solve that problem. And then Nico has been playing better on the left. I think one of our team's problems is we've got a lot of like really talented players, but a lot of them play similar positions. And so you can't fit them all on the pitch at the same time, because they all want to do the same thing. We talked a lot about that as the season has progressed. It's like, where do you play these guys? Like, who do you unseat? Because, you know, we've got some solid folks like Caicedo and Enzo. It's like, it's tough to it's tough to dethrone either one of them the way that they're playing, especially as of recently. So Mudrick hasn't been consistent. Raheem Sterling has been fairly bad. And so if we've got a competent soul on the left and then Noni and or Cole Palmer on the right, then we have Gallagher and Nkunku kind of in the middle. So that's kind of how I divide up our attacking threats. And for now, I think that works. I think that the lineup that we saw against Palace is close to our best 11. It's how I think we should line up against City. And it's how I think we should line up. And the way I try to gauge it, it's like, okay, we've got cup final in 2 weeks against Liverpool. How do I want to see us line up? It's like, I want to see Nkunku up top. I want to see Palmer on the right. I want to see Gallagher in the 10, and I want to see Jackson on the left wing. That's how I want to line up.
So let me pose the question, since you brought up Sterling. Would you play him in that 9 role? I mean, we've seen under various managers now, 4 managers now, but he's played in that role sparingly, but he's usually played well in that 9. Is he an option there? Is that kind of a way to justify a guy of his wages being on the pitch?
I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to trying it just because he's not unseating someone who's prominent or clinical. But he's just been so hard to read this year for me. He's had some good stretches, but he's had more bad stretches now than he has had good. And so he's someone who just strikes me as unmotivated and hasn't really wanted to buy in, especially considering like Gareth Southgate has watched a lot of our matches to see how he's doing, and he hasn't been selected from the England team, and he has all of the reason to like play pissed off and want to kick ass, and he hasn't done so.
Fair. All right. Well, talking about another guy who, at least I think, has cemented a spot. Malagusto impresses yet again. Really, he's had maybe 2 bad matches all season, and I think they were Wolves and Liverpool. But here's my hot take of the week. When Reece James comes back, Malagusto is still guaranteed in that 11. It might involve some positional changes for either Gusto or James, but I don't think you can take him out of that lineup.
Where would you play him? And if so, where are you playing Reece and him if you're talking about positional lineups to get them both on the pitch?
Well, I would be curious. I know we've floated this idea for 3 years now of Reece James in a number 6 role. Kind of, you know, partner with Caicedo, let Enzo flow forward. Or keep James on the right, move Gusto to the left.
Interesting. I can understand why. I think it's going to be a very tough sell when arguably the best right back in the world comes back from injury and you keep him on the bench. Thankfully, that's not my job. It's tough because Reece is Reece. I think what this does do is it provides us with a more comfortable option and without really losing anything between the two. With Reece, yes, he's your captain. You need him out there. I think in an ideal situation, even if you wanted to, like, if you wanted to have both of them out there, you could run Reece on the right, Gusto on the left. We've seen Reece also play like a right center back before, and that hasn't been the worst thing in the world. You know, I would maybe prefer that over De Sassi playing that right center back if we did go to a 3-back system. But, you know,
there's a lot of options. I think that when Reese comes back, it's his spot. I'm more curious around how we're going to handle Reese coming back as far as what his play time is going to look like. I think you're going to see a very gradual shift from Gusto to Reese. I don't think it's going to be overnight. Reese has had too many injuries lately where we can't risk him and just throw him out for 20 minutes in a match and then the next week expect him to run a full 90. I think you're going to see a very gradual kind of transfer of that right back position from Gusto to Reese James. And that's not any fault of Malo Gusto's, right? He created this conundrum because he's been playing so well. So it's no fault of his own. He is going out there. He's doing his job. Your job is to obviously do well and also make sure that the manager knows that you are a name that is guaranteed on that starting 11 week in, week out. He's proven that. But I think that with Reese being out for a while, Gusto is a more than capable option back there. But that being said, when Reese comes back, I still think it's his job. It'll just be a very gradual kind of shift of power from Gusto to Reese on that right.
You know, it speaks volumes that, you know, Reese James, our captain, one of our best players, goes down and his replacement has been so good that we're trying to find ways for him to stay on the pitch after Reese James comes back. That's a testament to Malo Gusto. Malo Gusto might be the best bit of business that has happened in the Bully administration, you know, so far. Like he might be the best buy, especially for considering what we paid for him. I mean, he's been great. He's been one of our top performers and one of our most consistent performers. So hats off to him. He's been awesome. I agree with both of you, weirdly. I think he needs to be out there, and I think we need to find a way to make both of them work. And so to piggyback on the easing Reese James in, I think if he plays a right center back, that's less running for you. That's less bombing up and down. I don't think Reese James can help himself. If he's playing right back, he's getting up and down the pitch, right? Like he is crossing balls in and he's coming back and defending and he's doing everything in between. So if he was a right center back in a three back system with wing backs, it would allow him to be more stable. And in our buildup play, those guys, you know, feed long balls over the top. Can you imagine Reese James playing the role of a Thiago Silva or a Levi Colwell where they're bombing balls kind of cross pitch and putting dimes out there? Like James is one of the best in the world at that skill set. So it's a way to utilize some of his strengths still without completely like, you know, neutering him. You know, I don't want to just take away all the things that make Reese James special while leaving the getting up and down to Malo Gusto. Young legs and fairly capable at doing so. I've been saying that the three at the back wingback system is something I still want to see with this team. I've been saying that for weeks now, and I think we have a unique team that can do it. And so it's going to provide a lot of strength to our team, and it highlights where we're good, which is those wing plays and controlling some of that aspect. And it, you take away a true number nine, which we don't have. So it's not something that we're really losing out on. So it's something I think will be flirted with. Probably not for the remainder of this season, but we probably won't have this conundrum until, next season. Cause I don't think James is coming back anytime soon, but it'll be something that I think we should work in, you know, work in a package of three at the back and be versatile enough to switch to it, depending on who we're going up against, depending on what we want to accomplish. One of the positives about Poch, whether you like it or not, Collins, is we have had a consistent system pretty much all year. You can argue that the tactics have been a little bit out there and off the wall, but or non-existent, if you will. But at least the way we've lined up has been relatively consistent, and that's been a different shift from other managers that we've had in the past. So Gusto's been well deserving of being on the pitch. I want to find a way to make it work with him and Reese James together, because I think, even if Reese played a right wing, it could be great. Even if you've like took the Noni Madueke role, I think we could be great. You lose out on his defending abilities, but Reese could be a great attacker as well.
Yeah. So just to clarify, because Matt made a comment earlier, I'm not saying bench Reese James in favor of Malagusto. I agree. Reese James is one of the best in the world. I like him at a right center back. I could see that. Reese James is certainly mobile, but he's got years now of hamstring issues. So I think Malagusto is going to be more reliable in terms of bombing up and down that right-hand side. So I guess after listening to the two of you, my conclusion would be Ben Chilwell goes to the bench. Vice captain or not, he has not looked great since he's returned. And we've seen Malagusto on the left, and he's looked just fine. Yeah, there wasn't really any real hiccups with him on the left. Like Cucurella is coming back around the same time as Reese James. Middle of March is when they're projecting both back. So you're basically going to have till the end of the season to ease them back in. So who knows? Maybe we'll be out of all competitions by then, and they'll have opportunities to play with that a little bit.
Play him as a striker. Call it a day.
Couldn't hurt. All right. Well, Parker, you mentioned Reese James in the Thiago Silva role. Thiago Silva's looking old, is all I'll say. The news came out this week that both parties, not that they're not interested in renewing a contract, but it's not a priority. So it looks like this is going to be the farewell tour for Thiago Silva, and I think we're certainly seeing his legs giving a farewell tour as well. What's the best way to handle the center back position these next couple months, as you've got some crucial cup games as well as now possibly back in, fighting for top six?
Well, you lose out a little bit because Badiashile is now hurt again. So you lose a little bit of versatility. I think it's got to be like De Sassi and Cole. If it's not Silva, it's got to be those two. And with Chills back, on the left, then Cole doesn't have to sneak out left. And so with the way we have injuries right now, I think that's the only kind of way to do it. I don't really need to see Silva too much out there. I think his presence inside the locker room is still felt, and he's still a good mentor and coach, still fights for the team. You can see the cracks, and you can see that we just don't play as quick when he's out there. So he's finally after all these years, he's still good, but he's definitely not great. He's not propelling our team forward anymore. And we've got suitable people that are younger and need to learn and want to learn, and we'll take our team to the next level in the future. So I think phasing him out is the smart thing to do.
Collins?
Yeah, I made the bold call last year of Thiago Silva's time's up, and then I got burned on that pretty quick. We talked about earlier this year that this is the year to start phasing him out, give him rest, save him for the big games. You don't need him in a game like we saw today against Palace, where Palace just sits behind the ball. You don't need Thiago Silva for that. I think he's been overused. I don't know if I play him against City or Liverpool, if I'm being honest. You need more mobility. Our center backs play a lot different with Thiago Silva on the pitch versus off the pitch. When Silva's on the pitch, it doesn't allow our wing backs to push up as much. It requires our center back or his center back partner to stay back with him, help cover. And that's not anything about his ability. That's just his legs being almost 40 years old. He doesn't recover with the same speed that he once did, even, gosh, a year ago, 2 years ago. I do want to give credit to Axel de Sasi. He's had ups and downs. He's caught a lot of flack. But you look at the center backs in this group, he's played more than every single one of them. He's played more than Silva. Fofana's in and out of injury. Badiashile in and out of injury. Trev is just coming back. Axel de Sasi has the second most appearances on this team behind Connor Gallagher. The guy's just a workhorse. Played multiple positions. I think Axel de Sasi is the anchor of the defense if you're going to phase out Thiago Silva. I like Levi Colwill as a partner for him, somebody a little bit more agile. But that's not to say that de Sasi doesn't have some athleticism too. He can still get around. But I think going forward now in this stretch, and we've talked about this run of games here being brutal pretty much through the end of March, you're going to need some mobility. Save Thiago Silva for when you really need him. If we're not going to re-sign him, we're not building towards a future here. You're not trying to build a partnership here. You just want, like what Parker said, that locker room presence, kind of a coach on the bench who's not Pochettino. Let the young guys do their thing. Let them be agile. Let's move a little quicker.
As defense attorney for Thiago Silva, one, you have a very inexperienced center back locker room. So yes, I agree with that. You need somebody with experience back there. We have talked about the experience gap with this team. Granted, it is drastic when we're talking about 20-year-olds and a 40-year-old. I get that. When we say that the pace of play is slower, I hold Caicedo and Enzo responsible for that, only because whenever Silva gets the ball, whether it's coming from off a goal kick or something from Petrovic or Sanchez, Caicedo doesn't get open. Enzo is already up the pitch, but he has to come and track all the way back, so we get stuck. Caicedo, for whatever reason, every time I watch him, and maybe I'm just looking too much into this, every time I watch him, it's like he's hiding behind a defender. Like, just get open, be an outlet, right? He doesn't do that. He just, like, hides behind a defender. So that's, to me, that's why things slow down a lot, because nobody's getting open for him, and he has to keep pulling off the Michael Bradley special or the Jorginho special, the back pass, the side pass. So I don't think that's on Thiago Silva. The other thing, he is probably the best distributor we have outside of Enzo on the pitch. He probably is. Long ball, his passing is, I would say, pretty damn sound, but he has that ability to hit the long ball too. I don't trust de Sasi with that. I don't trust Levi Colwill with that. Badiashile, nope. I haven't seen Fofana play in so long. I don't know if he has that in his locker. It's just been so long. It's all these little things that he does have that everybody else doesn't. Yes, he's 40 years old. He doesn't have the pace. He hasn't had the pace for a while. Like, yeah, maybe he's lost half a step, but he makes up for it by his placement and his positioning. Does he have to bust ass every once in a while? Yes. Does he have the same speed that he did 2 years ago? No. But keep in mind, over the last 2 years, he's been playing, Collins, you'll probably bring up the stat, he's probably played 85 at least percent of the games or percent of the matches. And most of those have been full 90s. I agree that we overused him, and I think we're seeing the effects of that now. I don't think that at this time that, yeah, you can run Colwill. We've seen his drastic ups and downs. Granted, he also was switching between center back and left back. Also noted, I get that. But still, even in center back position, it was still shaky, right? And this was a center back who had a great season the year before with Brighton at center back. So he knows it. It's in the Premier League, so nothing should really change all that drastically. But for whatever reason, it has. At least with Silva, you know what you're getting. He's slow, yes, but he positions himself well. He can also be a quasi number six and distribute when he needs to. When he needs to, I'm not saying you run everything through him, but when he needs to, he can be. How many times have we seen him when we have, you know, possession, we've had possession for 10 minutes, he's standing at the half line, nobody is moving to get open, and he just absolutely just bombs a ball and hits somebody in stride making a run. He's very good at it. But I don't always trust Caicedo to hit that. Enzo, I know he can hit it. We've seen it time and time again, but there needs to be more than just one person. And I think Silva gives you that added option as well. To me, I don't see necessarily anybody to unseat him as far as consistency goes. I think it is a good time to start phasing him out, but I still think that he has a lot of value on the pitch and not just as a locker room guy.
So if I may here, it's not so much Thiago Silva physically slowing down the game when we're, you know, when we're on the attack, right? It's how that affects where the team is, right? So yes, Matt, you're right. That, you know, when Thiago Silva's on the ball around halfway, nobody's really moving. But if you compare where, you know, just heat maps of where people are on the pitch when Thiago Silva plays versus when he doesn't play, you got Enzo and you got Caicedo moving forward more. You have them closer to the attack, which is where you want them. Thiago Silva at that right center back, and again, I'm not trying to discredit Thiago Silva. It's just that, you know, he's nearing a retirement age. You know, most center backs have been retired already for 5 years by his age. But we have to adjust accordingly because we know other teams will play for the counter against us, sit in a low block, play for the counter. We have to park other people further back to account for that because Thiago Silva is not going to be able to go back. Again, looking at heat maps, Enzo and Caicedo are the two in particular. They are further back when Thiago Silva plays versus when it's Badiashile and De Sassi, or, you know, Colwill and De Sassi, or De Sassi is the mainstay there basically. And so it's not so much Thiago Silva physically slowing down the attack with his passing and his distribution. It's Thiago Silva slowing things down because we have to play closer to him to make sure we're not being beat on the counter. And you talk about our offense being slow and being, I hate to say methodical, but that's what it is. It's very slow. It's 1-2 touch, look, pass kind of thing. Because everyone is grouped together close to that halfway line. And then you've got Nico and Palmer, basically the only ones far up. They're the Josie Altidores, basically, of this squad. So my thing is, if we're looking for more goals, we're looking for more attacks, and we already have a shaky defense as it is that chips in 1 to 2 goals a game, start building that center back partnership for the future now, because the future is coming in 4 months. So start building that now so that we can also start building into that attack. Let Enzo roam forward. Let Caicedo roam forward. Let Gallagher press higher so that we can create more chances up front.
Especially because we don't have much to play for this season. Like, if we were fighting for top 4 or top 6, like if we were in the race and we needed, like, if we were stable with Silva and shaky without him, right? And there was this like push pull of offense versus defense kind of a thought. And it's like, well, we need to compete, we need to score goals, you know, like there would be some decisions, but to me it's kind of a no-brainer because we're not really in it. And so if we finish 10th and we played Silva for the rest of the way, or finish 10th and or 11th even and don't play them, and we build a better partnership for the future, that makes sense to me.
I agree. I'm not saying he plays every match, nobody else gets a crack. Like, he does need to get phased out. That's part of it. All I'm saying is that I think he still holds a lot of value when he is on the pitch.
So looking at our next two matches, what's your center back pairing with Trev, Colwill, DeSassi, Silva? Is that all that's available right now? Benoit is out for about a month, right?
Don't you leave out the GOAT.
Alfie?
Okay.
Yeah, you still have Alfie.
Yeah.
And we, secret weapon.
And we're still playing City and Liverpool in our next two matches.
What happened when Billy G had to play against Liverpool? Boy showed out, so give him a crack.
All right, so I got Matthew. Parker. City and Liverpool. Two quick-moving attacks. A lot of pressing from both. Relentless pressing from both. What's your center back pairing?
Levi and Baezhill. I'm sorry, DeSassi.
Yeah, I like Levi. I like DeSassi. I wouldn't mind seeing Trev make an appearance. Last 10 minutes kind of thing. Hey, we were on that stretch for a long time where Trev had never lost a game. I think we can refine that magic. But Thiago Silva,
if he can't play against Liverpool and show out, even though Billy G did. Okay.
And what's Billy G doing now? Sitting at mid-table Brighton.
And showing out too.
Okay, Caicedo showed out there last year. Big deal. Graham Potter showed out as a manager. But I like it. Thiago Silva, I would like to see him come off the bench in those two. Provide a little bit of leadership in those, what is it going to, squeaky bum time? Where Liverpool or City will certainly be pressing for a goal because we'll be beating them so bad in the first half. Just provide a little stability back there late in the game.
I mean, Alfie has been kind of our match lockup kind of guy. You know, sub him on for an attacker and go more defensive and have him just kind of lock it in. He's sort of the John Alfie Mikel of this era. So I like that role.
John Alfie Mikel.
That could stick.
All right. Well, not necessarily pushing up against the hour, but we're getting close to it. So let's close with two things here, and that would be our man of the match polls. Honestly, I can't remember if we did one for Villa. That was a whole week ago. That was a long time ago. But I know we did one for Crystal Palace today. So we will start with that one. And while you guys talk, I will look up Aston Villa. So man of the match, Crystal Palace. You had four options. You had Enzo, you had Malagusto, Cole Palmer, Connor Gallagher. Where are we going for man of the match?
Connor.
It's rare to me when you have kind of like four standout performances. Like the four that we named, I thought were like head and shoulders better than everyone else. When watching that match, no one else really shone, but the two goals were great. I thought Palmer had a great game finding him on two assists and found Enzo late to kill it off. But you got to go to Connor Gallagher going back to Crystal Palace, and he's had three goals there now at Selhurst Park since leaving there. And so gotta shout him out for that, because that was hell of a performance, and he was all over the place as he always has been and always has done for us this year.
Yeah, there's fun fact floating around after this one. Connor Gallagher is the first player to score in the 90 plus minute with a winner for Chelsea since Connor Gallagher in 2022, also against Crystal Palace. Yeah, no, I'm not. I don't want Connor Gallagher out of the club. I think he's a squad player, but I got to give him props in this one. He was industrious, and he actually shot the ball unlike most of this team. So Connor Gallagher was my pick. But I want to give a quick shout out to the DJ at Selhurst Park. With the Everything's Going to Be All Right. That turned the tide for me. So Connor Gallagher is your winner, though, at 63%. Malagusto coming in second. Palmer in third. Enzo in fourth, which was surprising to me. He only got 5% of the vote. All right. Well, boys, two wins this week.
No Villa poll?
No other poll. Do you want to talk man of the match or man of the get the fuck out of here real quick? We didn't put up a poll, but I know we had some. Parker, you had some ideas.
I mean, I think the goal alone from Enzo had to make him the man of the match. I mean, it's one of the best goals. We didn't really even talk about it. I mentioned it briefly, but like, it was an absolute stunner. And it was just like the cherry on top. It wasn't like we were losing and this was like the spark. It was like we were winning 2-0 and this goal, you know, set up and it was just perfect. And the fact that he beat his Argentinian keeper, fellow World Cup winner in goal, Emi Martinez, who I hate, and the fact that he beat him on that screamer makes it just all so much better for me. And it's the best goal I've seen in a Chelsea player have in quite some time. I don't remember the last great goal that was to that caliber. I mean, it was phenomenal. So I give it to him just for that. And he had a great game otherwise, but it was special.
Yeah, no, I'll second that. That free kick was real nice against world-class douchebag Emi Martinez. So yeah, all right, we'll sweep it there unless Matt objects.
I'll take Connor's reaction to Enzo's goal. I'll take that over Enzo's goal.
Can we just make man of the match? Yeah, we'll add another poll, I think, and it'll be celebration of the game. You got Connor's doing that. You got Nico Jackson kissing Enzo's jersey. You had the Sassy crowd surfing. And you had Nico Jackson illegally entering the field. What's your celebration of the week?
I'm gonna broaden the Enzo celebration for me was, and some people were like saying it was too much and whatnot. And I'm like, you don't get it with all of the shit that was going on with Enzo this week and all of the rumors and all the crap. And then him to come out and hit that goal. It was everything. And it meant a lot. You could tell it meant a lot to him. You could tell it meant a lot to his teammates. You could tell it was a moment. And so him taking the jersey off, usually I don't love that, but what people were doing with the jersey all around it, you just love it. It's great.
I haven't seen DeSassi's crowd surfing yet. I know you guys sent me the link. I have not looked at it yet, but I have a feeling that's going to be my favorite.
It's great.
I love DeSassi. So that's my pick. Just channeling his inner Rudiger, gets the yellow card for going into the crowd, knocks some dude out while he's jumping in there. And then just, I don't know if he biffed it or what, or they couldn't hold him, but dude, he just got devoured by that crowd. That was a magical moment. And I've watched that video probably about 1,000 times. So maybe we'll add that for a poll going forward if we keep scoring goals.
Can we call it the honor, like the Tony Rudiger Selly Award or something like that? Like, can we honor our boy for that one?
The Walking GIF Award. All right. Well, boys, any closing thoughts on this positive week?
reality sets in this weekend because we're up against City.
To quote famous movie baseball manager Lou Brown, if we win one more, that's called a winning streak.
All right, I like it. I always like baseball references. If I had a drink, I would drink it. Well, make sure to check us out on all socials. Just search at Flag Down Pod. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to check us out now on YouTube. Got our podcast up there in video and in podcast form. Video is nothing special. I'll just warn you right there. But feel free to drop us a comment there. Mash that subscribe button, as the YouTubers like to say. But boys, again, it's been a wonderful week. I appreciate you guys dealing with my multiple personalities over the last couple of weeks. Can't help it. And hopefully we're talking about some more dubs next week.
Oh, yeah.